This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website, our website, with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From theathletic.com in Dallas, Texas, we're pleased to welcome to the program Sean Shapiro. Sean covers the Dallas Stars for The Athletic, of course. Sean, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. Sean obviously brought you on. Talk about the big news in the world of the Dallas Stars. That's the hire of Jim Montgomery as new head coach. Sean, the Stars had gone with the veteran coach for the last little while, Lindy Ruff for, you know, the 4 years or so. And then, of course, you had Ken Hitchcock for the 1 year last year. Now they've gone with the newbie head coach, at least newbie for the NHL. Jim Montgomery comes to the Stars from the Denver Pioneers of the NCAA. Are you surprised that the Stars went a different route and went away from the veteran coach to the rookie head coach?
Surprised now, no. Having seen what the Stars had done when Ken Hitchcock initially retired, I thought maybe just with what Jim Nill's hiring history has been with Lindy Ruff and Ken Hitchcock and everything like that, I thought initially when Ken Hitchcock initially announced his retirement, I thought, okay, we might be seeing Alain Vigneault in Dallas. That's really where I thought it might be going. But Jim Nill, about 3 weeks ago when he first spoke to us about opening up the coaching search, he talked about being open-minded and he wasn't going to make NHL head coaching experience something that it wasn't going to be something that was going to be a requirement for the next to fill this vacancy. And from that moment on, you started to get the idea, okay, the Stars are going to be more open-minded about this. And then actions obviously spoke louder than words over the following 3 weeks, where we end up with Jim Montgomery getting introduced yesterday in a press conference and, the Stars really trying to, I think they're seeing what's happening they see what's happening in Nashville and Winnipeg, where teams are playing fast. They're trusting younger players earlier, and the Stars really felt they needed a coach that was younger and was willing to embrace that demographic, and that's how we ended up where we are.
By the way, Sean, it's nice to see that Jim Montgomery subscribes to The Athletic. I've been subscribing since early last year as well. So when it comes to Jim Montgomery, what are the biggest challenges that you think he's going to face as a first-year NHL head coach?
I think there's a couple things. I mean, the first one for me, I think, is just getting everyone on board. And I don't think he'll have an issue with He won't have an issue with the Tyler Sagans and the Jamie Benns of the world. I think they'll be on board. I think just the key is the veteran players that are on this group, how does he manage them? How does he coach them? If Jason Spezza is still part of the Stars, how is he involved? Mark Messott. And I'm not saying those players are going to be an issue at all, but just Montgomery's never – he's coached in the USHL. He's coached in the college ranks, and it's – you think, and in reality, really, the oldest player he's ever coached is really 23, 24. So how can he build his – he's a big culture-building guy. Can he build his culture, and can he translate that to players that aren't college athletes and aren't guys who are trying to launch their career, guys that are a little bit more established? I think that's the first challenge I see. How does he translate that to the older demographic, the older half of his roster? And the second thing for me is just, can he just making that adjustment? And I think he'll be able to, but just you have to make that adjustment from the college hockey schedule. You play Friday, Saturday, you have 3 or 4 days to practice, and you can plan and have basically a week to plan for two games. Obviously the NHL, you got to reset and refresh right away. How well is he able to do that? How well is he able to adjust on the fly? How well is he able to manage that schedule? I think those are the first two, the two big things that stand out to me as far as just going from that college route to the NHL right away.
You know, Sean, switching over to the Texas Stars, the Dallas Stars farm team, they evened their series with Tucson last night to make it 1-1. What are you seeing from the Texas Stars? Do they have a lot of prospects that Dallas is eventually going to have the ability to call up?
They've got some guys down there that have played. There's Roope Hintz, who's had a pretty nice playoff run. Denis Garionov is a first-round pick who has kind of shown himself a little bit more in this playoff. The Texas Stars, I mean, to be blunt about the Texas Stars, it's a good story. They've reached the second round of the playoffs, but really the main reason they're in the second round of the playoffs right now is Mike McKenna, who took Syracuse to the Calder Cup Finals last year, has been playing on another level in goal. He was tremendous again last night in Game 2 against Tucson for them. The main reason they got out of Ontario is he stopped the final 95 shots he faced in the final two games of the series in Ontario when they got outplayed. But that's what you need in the AHL. You need those veterans to kind of pick up the slack while your young kids come along. So, Texas does has about three or four guys I look at that are probably future NHL players, guys to keep an eye on. But this team's success is kind of more built on that group of veteran guys holding the water, and with younger guys kind of stepping up and picking up the slack from time to time. That's kind of how this Texas Stars team is built right now.
Sean Shapiro is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sean covers the Dallas Stars for TheAthletic.com in Dallas, talking about the Stars' hire of Jim Montgomery to be their new head coach. Sean, you know, the last year under Lindy Ruff, the Stars were run and gun, no defense, all offense. And then last year under Ken Hitchcock, to no one's surprise, way more defensively focused. And the offense wasn't necessarily there aside from the top line. How do you think the Jim Montgomery is going to have the Dallas Stars playing? We know that with Ben and with Sagan, they have two of the best offensive players in the game. After that, things are a little bit thin when you come to secondary scoring. So what kind of strategy in terms of style do you think the Stars are going to employ under Jim Montgomery?
Well, if Montgomery spoke yesterday about being a relentless puck possession team, and that's kind of how his teams looked at Denver, which I think is even in a lot of college hockey, is there's a lot of dump and chase in college hockey, and his team kind of went against the trend and they held the puck a lot more, and that's probably why they were always high in the rankings and they won a national championship. And so it's one thing to say that. It's one thing to see that at the college level. And I think that's the style Montgomery is obviously going to try and push. And it's a moment here where I need to see actions speak louder than words again, where can he implore that and can the Stars actually embrace that style? I think they can. I think obviously they have the top end talent that can do it. One thing that will be really fascinating to me is how well and how quickly some younger defensemen are given an opportunity under Montgomery, because they never really were given a chance to play to succeed under Ken Hitchcock. Julius Hanka, for example, never really had a chance under Hitchcock. Miro Heiskanen, who was Stars' third overall pick in last year's draft, he should be in the NHL next year. He'll have a chance. So I think he has the tools to play that more puck-possessing style where defensemen actually carry the puck out of the zone and defensemen are actually involved in the play. There's the tools there. We just have to kind of see it develop. And also, Jim Neal has to help him out a little bit, too, where the Stars have some young guys who I think can step up, but this team really needs another top six piece to kind of take the burden a little bit off of that top group. I mean, I'm sure you guys see it in Winnipeg. There's such a benefit to having a second line and third line that can actually score just on a nightly basis. And that's just something where it just becomes such a task on Ben Sagan and Radulov that if they had one bad night, it was a bad night for the whole team. So Jim Neal has to help his coach out as well.
Sean, you mentioned Jason Spezza earlier. Is Jason Spezza more of a third-line center at this point in his career? And do you think Jim Neal's biggest maybe free agent acquisition or maybe trade acquisition has to be a second-line center to play behind Tyler Seguin?
I think so. I think Radek Foxa, the Stars of Radek Foxa, who I think is a very good I think could be a second-line center in the NHL. But I don't think he's a second-line center if the Stars want to be where the Jets and Predators are right now. I think he's a third line center who can really, and we'll talk about Radek Foxer right now, who can really unlock matchups and things like that. And so if the Stars really want to be a team that can compete and expect in this central division that is so good, they need somebody who can really be a second scoring threat at center. I don't know exactly how you get it done. If I know Ryan O'Reilly, for example, is a name that people have brought up to me because in Buffalo, obviously, I think a lot of people saw his post-mortem in Buffalo, and he looks like he needs a fresh lease on life. And so maybe he could be that fit there as a second-line center. Because Jason Spezza to me now is, A, he was underused by Kent Hitchcock, so his decline was sped up by Hitch. But he's really a third-line center guy who maybe if he's a top-six guy anymore, he's got to be a winger. He can't really drive his own line anymore and maybe a power play specialist. That's really what Spezza has become now.
Sean, Ken Hitchcock moved into an advisory role, which is always kind of an ambiguous title. We're never really sure what that entails. But what kind of role do you think he'll have with Jim Montgomery? Do you think he'll have a big role, or do you think he'll take more of a hands-off approach?
I think it's going to be more hands-off. It's going to be more minimal. I think it's kind of telling that when we asked Jim Neal yesterday about Ken Hitchcock's role for more finite of what it might actually mean, where basically when Hitch officially announced his retirement, Jim Neal basically told him take 6 weeks off, then we'll talk, which kind of tells me basically Jim Neal was even keeping Hitch out of the coaching search because he was trying to keep him kind of at arm's length away there. I think it's going to be more of a role where Jim Montgomery will have a line to Hitch where he can make a phone call and he can reach out to him and talk to him about things. But I think it's going to be more driven by whether Montgomery wants to reach out to him and whether Montgomery wants to speak with him and things like that. I think that's going to be more of the advisory role as opposed to Ken Hitchcock coming in and pulling strings from afar. I think frankly, that's going to be the best fit. If the Stars will allow Montgomery to kind of grow in this role, and there are many good things he can learn from Hitch, but if he's doing that when he's the one that's pushing the conversation as opposed to Hitch coming in and helicoptering in or something like that.
Sean, you mentioned Miro Heiskanen earlier, and you had a really good article yesterday for The Athletic. You know, follow Sean at Sean Shapiro. He does a great job on The Athletic talking about Jim Montgomery and how he's going to use Miro Heiskanen and Julius Honka. And I believe also that Heiskanen is playing at the World Championship right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is. He just got added to the roster. He was sick for a couple of days, so I think he actually just got added to the roster today.
And is the expectation that Miro Heiskanen is going to be able to step right into the NHL next year?
That's my expectation. The Stars, I think they're looking at it two ways. I think basically the plan is to kind of head into training camp with the goal of having Heiskanen win a job in training camp right away. Because of his presence, they're probably not going to bring back a veteran defenseman to fill that spot or anything, but there might be another guy who could be. They may bring in a guy who could kind of be that de facto seven spot holder if Heiskanen is a bit slow starting. But I think basically I look at it as the plan is Miro Heiskanen is part of this team's future. They want to get him up and going. This is the coach that they think can coach him well. And if he's not, doesn't win the job right out of training camp, he could potentially do something along the lines of we look back to the start of John Klingberg's career in Dallas, where John Klingberg, the year he received votes for the Calder Trophy, he was started the year in the AHL, played about 10, 12 games with the Texas Stars, then got called up and then played the final 65, 66 games or whatever it was with Dallas. So I think we'll see one of those two things, one of those two approaches with Heiskanen. It just depends on how quick he gets going out of training camp.
Sean, we'll let you go on this last question. Last 10 years, the Dallas Stars have won one playoff series. Under Jim Neal, the Stars have won one playoff series in the last 5 years. Is pressure growing on this organization to get, you know, results more than they've been getting as of late?
Yeah, the Stars owner, Tom Gilardi, the ownership is not happy, obviously. They feel like they've done everything. They feel like they've given the resources. They've went out and they've made big splashes. I mean, how many times do we talk about the Stars winning the offseason? They go get Radulov one summer. They get Sagan one summer. They even going back to when they originally got Jason Spezza, and they win the off for a team that wins the offseason so much, they haven't won much. They've only won one playoff series. So there's heat and there's pressure from the ownership group on Jim Nill that this team, this coaching hire needs to pan out, because this is a situation where Jim Nill doesn't get to hire another coach after this. He needs them to take a step under Montgomery. He needs to do his part to help his coach take a step forward. And Nill knows that. I know he's been very cordial and very clean about talking about how he didn't worry about that while making this hire. But deep down, we know that Jim Nill, if the Stars don't take a step forward this season and they don't start looking like a team that actually can compete on a consistent basis and a team that doesn't basically choke like they did this year, his job's on the line.
Sean Shapiro covers the Dallas Stars for TheAthletic.com. Sean, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Our pleasure, Sean. We'll do it again real soon. When we come back, we'll discuss more on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Maybe we'll actually talk about the game that happened between the Lightning and the Bruins last night, because it was a hell of a hockey game that was overshadowed by, you know, the licking.
Dan Girardi, baby.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kalorn out at the right point. For Yachty Gord, leaving it for Kalorn. Kalorn swings one in front. Score! The Lightning win in overtime. Girardi in front. Kalorn set the puck on goal. Tampa Bay leads the series 3-1.
Well, you know what they say, you can only hope to contain the offensive juggernaut that is Dan Girardi. You can't expect to stop him altogether.
Girardi and McDonough reunited in Tampa Bay with Ryan Callahan, all former Rangers.
Are you going to sing?
JT Miller.
Are you going to sing?
Like reunited and it feels so good?
Exactly. Come on. Belt it out there, big boy. Reunited.
All right. Let's go. Come on. They'll take us off the air if we do that.
Oh, Dave, that would have happened a long time ago.
Drew, you're creeping me out.
That was Kenny Albert on the call from last night.
Kenny Albert's a beauty.
He is a beauty. Tampa Bay with a huge comeback victory over the Boston Bruins last night.
What about that tying goal from Stammer?
Well, I mean, Bruce Cassidy, the Boston Bruins head coach, very upset on that tying goal, saying that the officials missed Nikita Kucherov tackling Charlie McAvoy, and that's what really led to the tying goal, and he probably does have an argument to be said for that. There was a lot going on in that game last night. Sort of nice to sit back last night and watch a hockey game where you don't have to really... You're not emotionally invested in it like you are with the Jets and the Predators to some degree. So you get to sit back and just enjoy two teams going at it last night, which is what the Lightning and the Bruins did. And the Lightning come ahead and are victorious with that 3-2 overtime win. And they take that 3-1 series lead. And now they're in the driver's seat going home to Tampa Bay for Game 5 tomorrow. A huge loss for the Boston Bruins, potentially. Yep. Torrey Krug leaves the game with what looks like an ankle injury. He's spotted post-game leaving the arena in a walking boot and on crutches. So it's hard to believe he's going to be, well, A, in the lineup, or B, healthy for tomorrow afternoon's Game 5 in this series. And the Lightning in a prime position to probably take care of the Bruins easier than anyone would have expected.
Yeah, and it's been the Bruins' first line, again, that led the way, right? We talked about it, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, and Patrice Bergeron. And really, they've depended on that top line for most of their offense. And, you know, for me, I've talked about Braden Point a lot this year. Braden Point, obviously, during the regular season, scored that big overtime winner in Tampa against the Jets. But that second line of Andre Palat, Braden Coburn, and Tyler Johnson, if you want to call it the new triplets line, has been fantastic. And the Lightning have been getting contributions from more players than the Bruins. And we just talked about it, Dan Girardi, but also Alex Killorn. Victor Hedman has had, I think, a better series than he did in the first round. Yanni Gourde, rookie player, undrafted player, has been excellent. I mean, they're getting contributions from all four lines. Anthony Cirelli on the third line. Mm-hmm. You can go up and down the roster. I mean, the Lightning are not Stamkos, Kucherov, and JT Miller have actually not had the best series. Maybe last night was the best of the four games for them. It's really been the second line that I talked about, if you want to call it Braden Point's line there, with Andre Palat and Tyler Johnson. That's been the line that's been the most dangerous for the Lightning. And, you know, for me, goaltending really hasn't been the story at all in this series. It's been back and forth. And, you know, we thought that the series was going to be tied going back to Tampa Bay. But, you know, Stamkos gets the goal, his first goal of the series, a huge goal. And then Dan Girardi wins it really early in overtime. And, you know, it's going to be really tough for Boston to come back. And whoever plays the Lightning next round, whether that's Pittsburgh, whether that's Washington, I mean, they're going to have their hands full, because Tampa's fast, they're skilled. And I realize you were a little critical, Drew, of, you know, Tuukka Rask on Braden Point's first goal, but that was a beautiful goal.
It was a beautiful move. I thought Rask just overplayed it with the poke check and put himself out of position. If he, I have no problem with going with the poke check. You just have to maintain your position between the pipes. He was covering, you know, only one quarter of the net by the end of the poke check. He had slid so far out of the realm of where he should be, and that's what I think allowed Point to be able to tuck it in past him and give the Lightning the lead.
Sorry, I actually misspoke. That wasn't Stamkos' first goal of the series. It was his second goal, but the point was, I mean, Stamkos wasn't very good in the first two games, and, you know, he picked up a couple of points yesterday, Dave, for the Lightning, and, you know, that line is crucial for them. We know Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos are their two best players, but if you didn't know how good Braden Point was, and Andre Palat, who missed a lot of time during the regular season, I mean, that second line is just as good as any second line in the league, as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed. Dave, your thoughts on the Bruins and the Lightning series so far? Can the Bruins bounce back? It really does seem as Torrey Krug's not going to play in tonight's game. Bruce Cassidy said it's a lower body injury, and it's usually not good, quote, when a player can't return to the game. Can the Bruins come back in this series without Torrey Krug on their back end?
No, well, I mean, can they come back? Maybe, but I think that Tampa is a team that everybody kind of forgot about and how good they've been all season long. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, similar almost to the way Washington was, I think you're happy with the focus being on Vegas, the focus being on Nashville, the focus being on Winnipeg, and nobody talking about you. And allowing you just to go about your business. I suspect John Cooper is very happy to just allow all the other teams to garner all the focus and to allow his team to do what they're doing, which is quietly going about their business and winning games. And look, that game very easily could have been a Boston victory, obviously. But the fact is that Tampa pulled it off. And to me, again, like as he said, they've got some other role players playing really well. And as a result, I think that you just have a team that, again, very quietly is going about their business. Nobody's talking about them. And to me, they could be very easily be a Stanley Cup either finalist or winner.
Well, they were the best team in the league. That's what I mean, the majority of the season.
That's why it's wild, right? Because nobody talked about Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's almost a bit of an afterthought. And to me, they're just such a dangerous team up and down the lineup that it's miraculous that they haven't been discussed.
Dave, at this point in the playoffs, and we know how good they were in the first round against Toronto, you need more from that Bruins second line of David Krejci, Jake DeBrusque, and Rick Nash. DeBrusque had a goal in game one, but he's been invisible the last three games. DeBrusque was, you know, arguably, aside from David Pastrnak, the most dangerous player against the Leafs. He had, what, five goals in the first round? So that line's got to be better, because right now they just don't have an answer for Braden Point's line, which has been matched up against the top line of David Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand. But they need more depth scoring. But, yeah, Torrey Krug's injury, Drew, that just comes at the worst time. Mm-hmm. Krug had a career year this year. And, you know, he's their second pairing defenseman there. So that's going to be really tough if he's not ready to go for game five, game six. And it looks like he's not going to be playing next game.
It seems quite unlikely. We spoke earlier in the program about Brad Marchand and his licking. Here's a text message from Bud in Headingley. Marchand should be suspended for the remainder of the Tampa Bay series. I am surprised the Boston franchise is not embarrassed and dealt with Marchand already. Should have done so on the first look. What a role model for young kids playing hockey. So Bud and Headingley via text message 129090 giving us his thoughts on that. Final word on the licking goes to Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper. We'll leave you with this. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
John, it's a second straight round where Brad Marchand has licked an opponent, and I'm just wondering if you think the league should step in and do something about that.
All I'm going to say is, like, there's absolutely no place in our game for that. Like, it's, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't. And it was, it's just like, How would you feel if I walked over to you right now and just gave you one big lick right from the chin all the way up? Yeah. See, that's pretty sure how Callahan felt. There's just no place in the game for that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
The opportunity right off the draw for Timo Meier. Top. Moved along for Eakin. Back for Top. He's not.
The Vegas Golden Knights victorious last night over the San Jose Sharks in Game 5 of that series.
Little Nip and Alex Tuch.
How long have you been holding on to that one?
Seriously. At least it's slightly better than your off-air popsicle joke you just made, which was met with boos and chagrins from the rest of the crowd here in studio.
Should I share the joke with our live audience at home?
Only if you want to punish them. Go ahead.
So the joke was...
Yeah, it's a terrible joke.
Brad Marchand hasn't been suspended, but he's been fined 5,000 popsicles.
It's still not funny. I mean, the second time you say it...
Because he loves to lick.
I get it, but being fined 5,000 popsicles...
Well, it's not a punishment, though.
...is not a punishment.
But it's not a real punishment. It's a joke.
Where's the comedy part?
I suspect Ezzie will not be at Rumors Comedy, but he will be doing
some... What about if Marchand was fined 5,000 fudgesicles?
Still not, again, he's still, a fudgesicle still is licking. Delicious.
And he's still licking.
I mean, it's got to be something you don't want to lick.
This is the punishment. It's to teach him a lesson that he should be licking popsicles instead of other people. Players' faces. see, you're giggling, Drew. You like it.
We got to thank Brad Marchand, because who knew we would be having this much fun talking about licking?
Welcome back to hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. We'll talk about the Golden Knights and the Sharks, but a quick update from the Nashville Predators game day skate. They're on the ice in Nashville. Kevin Fiala back in the lineup, at least thus far. He's skating on a line with Kyle Turris and Craig Smith, which is what the traditional second line of the Predators has been.
Yeah, that's been their second line for most of the year.
Right, yeah. Since Turris obviously went there from Ottawa.
Yeah.
Scott Hartnell looks like he's going to be out of the lineup as he's skating with Callie Yarncroc and Ellie Tolvanen, two players who haven't played in this series. Yarncroc played one game, I believe, but Tolvanen still hasn't played. So it looks like, at least early on in Predators game day skate, that Hartnell back out of the lineup and Kevin Fiala back in for the Predators. We'll see how things develop throughout the morning
what
skate.
What depth that the Predators have, right? We know, sure. Ellie Tolvanen, I mean, he hasn't played at all in the playoffs. He was their late first-round pick at the 2017 draft.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Callie Yarncroc is a fantastic player, and there might be some concerns there, guys, with health, because Yarncroc was injured earlier. So, you know, not surprised that he's not in. And, you know, Hartnell hadn't played before game 4, right? So it's no surprise that Fiala's going back into the lineup. Obviously, the game 2 overtime hero and double overtime. But, I mean, Peter Laviolette is not afraid at this point in the year to move players in and out of the lineup. So not that surprised, because Fiala has that element of speed, and obviously he can score off the wing as well. But, you know, a little unfortunate for Hartsy, who had a great game in game 4.
Do you call him Hartsy?
That's his nickname.
I know, but that's the nickname of your good buddy as well. You might get your heart confused.
I interviewed him a little bit after the game there, so I think he'd be fine with that.
Does he call you Ezzie?
No.
No.
He has no idea who I am.
Just says, get away from me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he said, how did you get in here?
Why aren't you holding a microphone for this interview? You're just holding your hand out there. Talk into this hand, please, Scott Hartnell. Anyways, let's talk about the Golden Knights Sharks series. Golden Knights jumped out to a 4-0 lead last night against the Sharks. They had to hold on as the Sharks staged a third period comeback. They get an empty netter to make it a 5-3 victory over the Sharks. Game 6 goes back in San Jose tomorrow night. A back and forth series, just
yep.
Like most of these series in this first round. This one's been, you know, just as advertised, the Golden Knights on home ice have just been terrific. They lost game two on home ice, of course, but they take the big victory in game five, and now they have an opportunity to close it out on the road tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you guys watched this entire game, but I watched the entire game, and you know, you're right, Drew. No team has won two games in a row in this series, and you know, I thought the score flattered the Golden Knights, and I felt for Martin Jones because Martin Jones was excellent in game four, obviously getting the shutout, and you know, it was, you know, the Eric Halla goal in the second period and Alex Tuck's goal, which was a weak goal. They were both weak goals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jones has struggled at times, I think, with his confidence in the series. And, you know, early on in the game, it was a very even first period. And James Neal's goal, if you saw it, I mean, that was just a rebound. Shea Theodore puts it on net, and James Neal is just in the right spot. Not much you can do about that. Brendan Dillon was defending Neal, but you know, you go up 4-0. That fourth goal was the killer goal. Halla's goal was from a bad angle. And, you know, Tuck's goal, you know, that just really, you think about it, I mean, if it's a 3-0 game, they would have tied it up, right? And they made it interesting, you know, late in the game, LeBanc, Hurdle, and Bodker got the goals. And I just don't think that the Sharks have defended well enough for my liking. And, you know, Mark-Edward Vlasic is arguably a top five shutdown defensive defenseman in the league. And I think he's struggled at times with the speed of this series. And we've kind of talked about it all year. You know, you match up the Vegas Golden Knights versus the Sharks. You think, okay, well, it's kind of offense versus defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it has been. Because I think the goaltending's been pretty even. You know, early on in the series, Drew, you'd give the advantage to Marc-Andre Fleury.
Sure.
He gets a shutout in the first game, but we talked about it. Jones had a shutout in game four. So goaltending, to me, hasn't been the deciding factor. I just think the Golden Knights' depth and their speed has caused a lot of problems. Everybody knows how good the Carlson, Marchessault, Smith line is. The Perron, Hall, and Neal line has been excellent. And the third line, Cody Eakin centering that third line with Lindberg and Alex Tuck. I mean, Tuck had two goals in game five. I mean, they have a lot of depth. Even that fourth line for the Golden Knights is a good line with Belmar, Carrier, and Ryan Carpenter, who they acquired off of waivers from the Sharks,
nothing.
Right? So,
yeah.
I mean, this Golden Knights team, they just continue to defy the odds. And I still think, you know, in a seven-game series, it's kind of a coin flip, Dave. And, you know, I was kind of leaning towards the Sharks winning the series, but the Sharks have to win two games in a row now, right?
You know, it was interesting to me because the one thing I thought from watching part, like I didn't watch the whole game because I was at the Moose game, but I watched from when I got home. And to me, I thought that I liked the way Vegas kept pressing. They didn't sit back and on their three-goal lead. And Eakin set up Tuck for the fourth goal. And you thought, okay, well,
it was a beautiful, to interrupt you, beautiful saucer pass from Eakin.
And just a beautiful redirect by Tuck to put it up and over Jones. And it was a beautiful goal. And you thought to yourself, okay, it's 4-0. And the crowd is going crazy. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, there's no chance that San Jose is getting back into this game. Then a minute later, LeBanc scores and ties, you know, gets to make it a 4-1 game. You're thinking to yourself, okay, well, whatever. Then all of a sudden it's 4-3 with about 4.5 minutes to go. And you think to yourself, it's shocking in a game that was 4-0 that the Marceau empty net goal ends up being so crucial to ensuring that your team wins. But, I mean, Vegas is just such a fun story. And it's almost unbelievable, defies logic, that this team is doing what they're doing. But they're a fun team to watch, and as he talked about it, and he's right, it's the speed at which they play the game. I mean, William Karlsson's speed and his ability to shoot the puck, I mean, it's unbelievable. And they've got all these guys playing so well together that, I mean, they really do look like they're heading to the conference finals.
And I thought, guys, game four was the only game in this series where the Sharks have neutralized the Golden Knights. Right, and we talked about it. It was a shutout. Obviously, you know, that's going to happen.
The only game where they really eliminated their speed.
Right, and you know that's what the Sharks have to do. They have to slow it down.
Sounds familiar, though, doesn't it?
Well, it's true. I mean, the Golden Knights and the Jets, as far as I'm concerned, are the two fastest teams in the league. And when we've seen the Jets and Golden Knights play, it's back and forth, and that's not what you want to see. And that's what I thought happened yesterday. You know, the Golden Knights go up early with that late goal from James Neal. That was late in the first period.
Yeah,
and it starts to open up a little bit. And then the Golden Knights have a 3-goal lead and then a 4-goal lead. Now you're chasing the game. And yes, they made it interesting there. But as far as I'm concerned, you can't go down 3 or 4 goals to the Golden Knights, especially with the way Fleury's playing in these playoffs.
You're unlikely to get that many past him. I mean, the Golden Knights are actually getting healthier at this point. Lucas Spezza played last night, making his return for the first time since February 27th.
He's a good defenseman.
He can skate. He can move the puck. I mean, he's not flashy, and he's probably never... I mean, he was more highly touted than his career has really proven to be. But, you know, they put Spezza in the lineup. They take John Merrill out of the lineup. They also make the move to take Thomas Tatar out of the lineup and add Oscar Lindberg up front for the Golden Knights. just so many options available to Gerard Gallant, and he's making the right moves at the right time.
Right, and I think Pete DeBoer is an excellent coach, and him putting Joaquin Ryan into the lineup. Paul Martin was struggling, paired up with Brent Burns. Brent Burns and Joaquin Ryan are going up against the top line of Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith, and they've been excellent. And, you know, it's amazing that we're still talking about how underrated this line is, with Carlson scoring 40 goals and Marchessault and Smith just continuing their strong play from when they were teammates with the Florida Panthers, right? But, I mean, this team is not just a one-trick pony. The way this team is constructed, I mean, you have to give so much credit to George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon and the job Gerard Gallant is doing, because he doesn't necessarily play one line over the other. I mean, he's confident in putting whatever line he wants out there, and he even mentioned this early this week. He's really not matching lines. I mean, he's letting Pete DeBoer do the line matching, because really it's almost like this team doesn't have a number one line. It's almost like they just have four number one lines. Obviously, the fourth line, you know, Carpenter, Belmar, and Carrier, that is, you know, not as talented as the top three lines. But, you know, Cody Eakin, Alex Tuck. Alex Tuck's a former first-round pick of the Minnesota Wild. He's a good player. So you got Alex Tuck on your third line. They have depth.
They absolutely have depth. Another update from Preds Morning Skate. Here's what their lines look like today. No real changes aside from that Kevin Fiala one I mentioned off the start of the segment. Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson. We know how good that's been. Fiala returns second line alongside Kyle Turris and Craig Smith. The third line of Sissons, Bonino, and Watson stays together. And then the fourth line of Salamaki, Fisher, and Hartman. So it does look like Hartnell going to be out of the lineup for the Predators, and Kevin Fiala returns. We'll see if Peter Laviolette is making the right move after Hartnell had an impact in the Game 4 victory for the Preds over the Jets. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Capitals and the Penguins. That's another epic playoff series between those two teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shoved it back on for the carry-on by Simone. Here's Simone drifting, got it to Crosby. Simone! And then a scramble score! Jake Gensel has scored again in this series, and the first of the night. A heavy hit on Letang by Oshie, and the two of them are eye-to-eye, and here's Gensel. Score!
Watch this play by Crosby. Dances away from Ovechkin, just slips the puck over right there to Gensel, who's got all kinds of time to put it in the empty net.
Honestly, at this point in time, Jake Gensel not scoring in a playoff game is more newsworthy than when he scores. He had another two goals for the Penguins on Thursday night. That puts him up to 10 goals in these playoffs.
He's got 21 points.
It's incredible.
And I have him in the hockey pool for the second year in a row.
What place are you in?
I don't care.
As he's more of an individual,
so you're just happy that he's...
I have Jake Gensel and you don't.
Well, that's fine, but I mean, what
aren't you winning the hockey pool?
I think I'm in third right now. I'm not 100% sure, but
I think we're in fifth or sixth.
Okay, so you have Jake Gensel and then a whole bunch of crappy players after that. Was that your strategy?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, the Penguins and the Capitals, another epic battle in that playoff rivalry. 2-2 for nobody after the Penguins won 3-1. On Thursday night.
Are you sure it's not 2-2 for Pittsburgh?
I'm positive it's not 2-2 for Pittsburgh, but it sort of feels like it might be 2-2 for Pittsburgh as they take that victory. Game 5, of course, goes back in Washington later on tonight. And, I mean, what more can you say? It's just, you know, it's sort of fitting, just like the Jets and the Predators, two very evenly matched teams going back and forth. The Penguins win Game 1 in Washington. The Caps come back, win the next two. The Penguins regain home ice advantage with Game 4's victory. And now, the Capitals still have home ice advantage going back to Washington for potentially two of the next three games. Just another fantastic series between these two storied rivals.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Gensel's got 10 goals. He also has 11 assists.
Yeah, well, that
makes 21
points.
And the second round's not even over right now. I mean, I think he's the favorite to win the Conn Smythe if it was awarded after, one and three-quarter rounds, Drew. But, you know, I think, quite frankly, the first line of Pittsburgh is outplaying the first line of Washington. And, you know, Patrick Hornquist is a guy that I don't think ever gets enough credit. He's Thomas Holmstrom 2.0. He really is. And, you know, Evgeny Malkin's health obviously has been important in this series. He obviously contributed with another goal. But Phil Kessel hasn't got as active in the series, but I mean, we knew the series was going to be close. I think there's a good chance the series goes to seven games, and you know, we knew it was going to be back and forth. And you know, Matt Murray has saved his best goaltending for later in the series, because I thought Matt Murray was a little bit shakier, especially in the first round. But even in this round, you know, he was struggling a little bit, and you know, he was really solid for the Penguins. But you know, it could come down to a power play goal. It could come down to a deflection in overtime. I mean, this series for me has been fascinating, and it's been the second best series after the Jets Predators series, and really it's lived up to the billing so far.
It certainly has. Game five of that series goes tonight, just before the Jets and the Predators, Dave. You know, at this point in time, the Caps have home ice advantage, so I guess, is that a positive, is that a negative? I don't know if it really matters in this series. I don't know if it really matters in the Jets Predators series either, for that matter. You know, this has got to be Alex Ovechkin's, I mean, I know you say that it's his last, we've said it's his last stand on so many different times, but you know, it's 2-2. It's a best of three at this point. Hasn't necessarily played his best hockey, but you have to think that he's going to try. And I mean, we know what he did in game three, getting that winner with about a minute and 7 seconds to go. You know that all the eyes are focused on him, and this is an opportunity for him to leap over that hurdle that is the Penguins and Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think what you're getting at, Drew, is it's fitting that they're playing each other, and that if Alex Ovechkin is going to be able to move on and challenge for the Stanley Cup, then it would have to go, the run would have to go through the Pittsburgh Penguins. And and I think that that's true. I think that if you want to, you know, be the best, you have to beat the best. And, you know, the defending Stanley Cup champions for the last 2 years are the Pittsburgh Penguins. And so if you're the Washington Capitals, this is a monumental test. And I think this is a huge game five, because I think if Pittsburgh wins tonight, I think they probably win the series, which is not rocket science, but I suspect that that's what would happen. And I think if Washington wins, I'm not suggesting the series is over, but I think that mentally that they're more, they'll be stronger as a result, because, you know, you saw the way Backstrom reacted after the loss. He was
cursing, throwing things,
You know, at this league, and he was obviously really upset about some of the shenanigans that were going on. But the reality is that just from Pittsburgh's been there. They've done that. Mm-hmm. And they know they have a calmness because of they've been there, and they have that. They know what to do, and they know how to get it done. Washington is much more, not tenuous, but they're nerves. Their nerves are going to be there simply because they know the pressure is on them. The coaching staff, the pressure is on them. The pressure is all focused towards Washington. Now, of course, the defending Stanley Cup champions aren't going to say, well, we don't have any pressure on us, because, of course, they're trying to do something that we don't see, especially in the modern era, which is a three-peat. So from Pittsburgh's perspective, yes, there's still pressure on them, but they have to go into this building knowing that the pressure is on the Washington Capitals, and that mistakes by the Capitals will be magnified. So I think the edge is slightly in Pittsburgh's favor, but I still like the Capitals.
Ezzie, how concerning is it if you're the Capitals that really, the Penguins, aside from Gensel and Crosby, you know, haven't been great in this series? I mean, Malkin's been injured and whatever. I mean, he's got a point a game, so you can't really criticize him. But, you know, that sort of secondary scoring for the Penguins that was so important to their success the last couple playoff runs hasn't really materialized yet. Yet here you are 2-2 in a best-of-three situation now. It just seems like the Capitals can't stop Gensel and Crosby. And I mean, I guess there's no surprise there, given it's Sidney Crosby. But you have to be a little concerned for the Capitals that the Penguins' secondary scoring hasn't shown up yet, and you're still only tied.
Right, and that's why Game 5 is going to be so crucial, and Dave talked about it. I don't necessarily agree, you know, going back to what you said before. Ovechkin's got 3 goals and 5 points in the series, Drew, so he didn't have a good game last game. We have to mention as well, you know, Tom Wilson.
Yeah.
You know, is suspended right now. He's going to be out for the next 2 games. They've got Devontae Smith-Pelly up on the top line, and you know, Devontae Smith-Pelly is the type of guy that can play that physical game. But you know, I think there are concerns on both sides about secondary scoring. And you know, Kuznetsov, you know, he's had a decent series, but I think, you know, he hasn't necessarily been driving the offense. Backstrom's had good games. He's had bad games. And, you know, I don't think that third line has done much there with Eller, Connolly, and Jacob Vrana. Vrana's obviously a rookie. And, you know, I think they have to, if you're the Capitals, I think it's pretty obvious that you have to shut down the Crosby, Gensel, Hornquist line. But back to what you were saying, Drew, I mean, Malkin has played 2 of the 4 games in the series. He's got a goal and an assist, and he's been a force out there. But I think Phil Kessel, and we talked about this on Wednesday's show, Kessel's got 1 goal in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean,
1 goal in 10 games, and Kessel for the last couple of years has been one of the Penguins' leading goal scorers. So I think if you're Mike Sullivan, you're concerned about Kessel, but you're not too concerned because you know that he's been so consistent and solid for you year after year in the playoffs. So, You know, Dave mentioned, you know, there isn't really an advantage here in Game 5, and I agree. I think, you know, I could see this game going either way. Caps have home ice. They get last change. You know, Penguins have some momentum. We know that oftentimes momentum doesn't carry over from game to game. Ask the Jets, you know, Game 3 to Game 4. They weren't able to carry that momentum, and Nashville, you know, got home ice back. So, I mean, it could come down to that. I mean, it could come down to if Phil Kessel gets going and, you know, pops in a couple goals, that could be the difference in this game. But, you know, I expect another close game, and it's been a little bit back and forth. And, you know, I think sometimes the coaches don't like that. Maybe they're seeing too many goals. But, you know, for me, if Crosby's line is as effective as they've been the entire playoffs, I mean, we talked about it. Gensel's got 21 points in two rounds. Crosby's got 19. I mean, and Gensel, you know, is not a passenger anymore. Gensel's a great player. Sure, it helps to play with the best player in the world right now, but, you know, that is a very dangerous line. So, you know, it's up to the Capitals to figure out how to shut down that line. Not many people have shut down that line, but, you know, it should be a very interesting game. And, you know, again, I think there's a good chance that we're going to see this go to seven games.
That's what I was going to ask is how do they shut it down? I mean, you know, they know it's not like it's coming out of surprise that Jake Gensel and Sidney Crosby are a key to the Penguins' success. I mean, Derek Brassard, who came in, you know, at the trade deadline, he's got 3 points in the playoffs. He's been absolutely invisible.
Yeah, he hasn't been very noticeable.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the Capitals know who they need to target and they know that who they need to focus their energies on. They just haven't been able to do it. And you wonder how all of a sudden they're going to be able to flip the switch, or do they just maybe say, okay, we're going to, you know, Crosby and Gensel are going to get what they're going to get, and we're just going to have to try and survive it and overcome it, because they haven't had an answer to shutting them down. And just like nobody has had an answer to shutting down Crosby and Gensel for the past 3 years.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, that's why secondary scoring and depth comes into play here. And I think, you know, both teams are fairly even. I would give the Penguins the edge up the middle. But, yeah, it's going to be one of those games. I mean, we've seen 2 one-goal games out of the 4 games in this series. And, you know, maybe this game opens up a little bit. But I'm expecting it to be another close game for sure.
Yeah, there's no reason to think differently in that sense at all. Congratulations goes out to John Carlson, who had a baby today. Or I guess John Carlson's wife had a baby today. So
maybe that'll bring the Caps good luck.
Well, you always say that a guy usually scores right when it's either his birthday or he has a great family a family event like having a child. So maybe John Carlson will get on the scoreboard for the Capitals in tonight's game. He certainly made himself a ton of money with his performance this offseason and this postseason and his performance during the regular season. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus for the remainder of the program to the Manitoba Moose. They had game one last night at the arena. They fell to the hands of the Rockford Ice Hogs. Game two goes later on this afternoon before the Jets and the Predators. Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock joins us next to talk about the Moose and the Ice Hogs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. If you want to check out some great photography from both the Jets games, the Moose games, and of course the runway party outside of the Jets home games, that's available on our Instagram feed. Just search for Illegal Curve on Instagram. Some absolute fantastic photography. While you're at it, check out our website. It's got the latest in Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's a good friend of the program. He is the Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster. His name is Mitch Peacock. Mitch, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Mitch, obviously brought you on. Talk about the Moose second-round playoff series against the Rockford Ice Hogs. Got underway last night. Not a great result for the hometown team. But before we look at Game 1, I want to look back to the series against Grand Rapids. The Moose, very impressively, going into Grand Rapids, taking 2 out of 3 games to win the best-of-5 series. You know, did you see more of the, let's call it the first half of the season, Manitoba Moose in that series where they were one of the best teams in the AHL? Do you see more of that team than the team we'd seen towards the end of the year?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think what I saw was the best version of the second half team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they can play the way that they played the first half of the season simply because the makeup of the team. Jack Roslovic was battling for the league scoring lead. He was probably in contention to be the most valuable player in the American Hockey League. And when you lose a player like that, it changes the nature of your team. The Moose were able to score their way out of trouble over the first 30, 32 games of the season. They couldn't do that after Jack was gone, and they certainly couldn't do that at times due to injuries and other personnel matters. So I think that what the team did was develop a better understanding of how it needed to play to be effective in the second part of the year, and took that to another level in that opening round series against Grand Rapids, and in particular, as you pointed out, in the games in Michigan, where they learned that they had to be really responsible defensively, very disciplined to their system, manage the puck excellently, not give the other team anything, and then try and score on their chances. And because of that, and being really true to that, they were able to be effective. The huge game to me was game three, coming off the 5-1 loss at home where the series was tied 1-1 with Grand Rapids winning really convincingly at Bell MTS Place. And you wondered if maybe the veteran experience of the Griffins had really asserted itself and the series was about to go the other way as far as the Moose were concerned. But they came out very, very impressively in the game in Grand Rapids and took that game 6-3, couple of empty netters, padding the score a bit there, but played the right way and had a huge performance. And I thought played very similarly the next night, just lost on a couple of mistakes and weren't able to score, but played the game the right way, and it was a template for them to go into Game 5, and they executed well in Game 5 and got the result they were looking for, and had every reason to believe that they could be confident going into the matchup with Rockford.
Mitch, sticking now with Game 2 here between the Moose and the Ice Hogs, puck drop is 4 o'clock today. Of course, you've got the call with the gentleman sitting beside me here, the handsome Dave Minuk. When you look at...
those pipes, they don't wear them out.
Yeah, we're making sure he's not talking too much. Drew usually hogs all the airtime anyways, Mitch.
It's true. It's all about my ego.
In order for the Moose to be successful in the series, you mentioned the Jets are obviously have Jack Roslovic right now. He's not with the Moose, and Mason Appleton's injured, didn't play in Game 1. He's not going to play in Game 2. And Buddy Robinson got the Moose on the board yesterday, and then they got the late goal from Jan Kostelic. But in this series, I think you'd agree that the Moose are going to depend and have to have balanced scoring to be successful. But who's going to need to step up offensively, in your opinion? Is that going to be a player like Chase DeLeo? Is it going to be Nick Petan? Who are you looking for to step up maybe offensively in Game 2?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because what we've seen from the Moose so far is a real balance to their scoring. It's been spread out quite substantially. In fact, 19 players have a point for Manitoba over the first six games now of the playoffs. They've really been able to get it from a number of different sources. Chase DeLeo's leading the way with those 7 points. He had a couple of outstanding games in first-round wins against Grand Rapids. I think he's really turned his season on its head here in the playoffs. He's taken his game to another level. So he just needs to keep doing what he's doing, and I think the points will come. Players like Patrice Cormier are critical to the team's success. I thought he had a monster game in Game 5 in Grand Rapids. Playing on that line with Brendan Lemieux and Buddy Robinson, they were huge. Mike Scarbosa, I thought, was superb in the first round and took his game to a level that we hadn't seen for some time in the regular season. He's going to be very important for the team to have success. I'm a bit old school in the sense I think your centers really have to set a tone. So I could keep going down the list and tell you that I think Brody Sutter is a guy that they could use something from here in the postseason as well. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens with Michael Spacek coming off the suspension today. He's been absolutely instrumental in their power play. In fact, they haven't scored a power play goal since he was suspended. They've had 9 chances on the power play, or 9 turns at least, and haven't been able to score. So I think he'll be very important. J.C. LaPointe had 17 goals in the regular season and is always a guy who very quietly is near the top of the team scoring in terms of even strength scoring. And he hasn't had a point so far in the playoffs. So I think what the Moose are looking for is some of those types of players to be able to contribute to help them here against a Rockford team that is really feeling at it, especially when you put them on the power play.
And, Mitch, this is a Rockford team, as you talked about, has come in with, they sweep Chicago. They ended the regular season on quite the roll. For a young Moose team, when you have a play like we saw yesterday, which – Tyler Sakura scores on the Peter Stojkovic delay of game call penalty, and then 45 seconds later, Sammy Niku gets tripped up. There's no penalty called, and then John Hayden scores right away to put the team up 3-1. How demoralizing is that for a younger team, and just how critical is it for them to kind of recognize that they can't allow something like that to impact them, and they just have to keep on playing?
100%. I think that, you know, players who've been around the block and seen things over the years are able to go, yeah, I've seen this before. It doesn't really matter. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. It'll give ourselves the best chance to be successful. Younger players go, oh, my goodness, now what? You know, the world's falling apart. What do we do from here? So you need to have that element within your team, the players who can say, guess what, guys? That's a bad break. That's unfortunate, but nothing changes. We need to keep playing the game the right way. You know, you hear players say you have to flush it. Everybody has different terms for it. A lot of players will say bleep it, and then, you know, that gets them on to the next phase of the game. I would say whatever it is, it's something that a player has to learn. I don't know if you can, you know, say when it happens. Maturity is a hard thing to measure, the timing of it, but I think that that is absolutely essential. And I think that was really a key to the Moose being effective in the first round. I mentioned earlier the success in Game 3 coming off the 5-1 loss at home. It would have been very easy for them to say at that point, well, I guess this isn't going to be our series, maybe next year. But they found a way to put that game behind them and play the right way. And if you can just say to yourself that, you know, the past is gone and the future is unknown, let's just play in the moment here and see where we go, you can have a chance at it at least. And that'll be critical to any success they have.
Mitch Peacock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Manitoba Moose. Game 2 between the Moose and the Ice Hogs goes later on this afternoon. Moose, Colin Delia, the Rockford Ice Hogs goaltender, has been fantastic in these playoffs. 1.62 goals against average and a .944 save percentage. Do the Moose need to make life more difficult for Delia, given how zoned in and how locked in he's been so far in these AHL postseason?
Yeah, it sure wouldn't hurt. I mean, you know, anytime you can take the eyes away from a goalie or maybe get him thinking about something other than focusing on the puck as it's being released, you're going to give yourself a better chance. I think also you want to look at getting the puck moving laterally. Any goalie who has to move from one side to another has a difficult time covering the net. You know, the scoring chances, or at least the chances of conversion, go up and the save percentages go way down when you get a goalie moving from one side to the other, even as good as Delia is at going from side to side. So those sorts of things have to be standard operating procedure. They've got to get away from the one-and-dones where they're shooting from wide angles and then just watching him freeze the puck and get ready for a face-off. But they also have to be confident in putting the puck to the net, if that makes sense, because you don't want to pass up shooting opportunities, no matter who you're playing against. So I think that really what the Moose are looking for is more possession, cleaner entries, and longer time at the offensive end, which would then lead to a variety of looks at the net. They just haven't had, I don't think, the kind of possession that they're looking for. And I think that sort of stems from the fact they've had difficulty getting all four lines into the mix. And really important against this Rockford team that has such depth. And, you know, Jared Culleton doesn't seem to have any problem playing any of his four lines, any of his three D pairs. The Moose need to be in a situation where they're not straining the same people to come out all the time to play against all of those weapons from Rockford. If the Moose can find a way to get four lines skating, at least for the first portion of the game, to give some energy for the latter part of the game, I think they can spend more time inside the Rockford blue line, and then that will make things harder for Delia.
Mitch, Tanner Kaspik, a good Brandon boy, former member of the Brandon Wheat Kings, made his Moose debut. He's not even a Winnipeg Jets draft pick. He's a St. Louis Blues draft pick, but he picked up an assist, something that you don't see very often. But what did you think of Tanner Kaspik's game last night? And is the expectation that when Spotchek comes back, which he is this afternoon, he's going to take Kaspik's spot? I guess the question is Kaspik expected to play in Game 2?
Well, you know, that sort of thing is kind of above my pay grade, but I would be a little bit surprised if he is able to keep his place in the lineup. And through no fault of his own, Michael Spotchek certainly is coming back in. There's no question about that. And then it gets down to playing players that fit the circumstance best. And I suspect there might be players within the Jets organization that fit the circumstance better today. But you have to tip your cap to the Jets organization for making that connection with the St. Louis organization and bringing in a player like that who's a fine young prospect and, as you said, a good Manitoban. The Jets and Moose have always got a soft spot for people from this part of the country, and I think he's earned the opportunity because of the way he handles himself. Tanner Kaspik is an impressive young man to be around. He's very focused. He's very determined, very dedicated. You can see in his game the qualities that it takes to be a pro. There's no surprise as to why St. Louis would have an interest in him, and it just so happens that St. Louis doesn't have its own AHL affiliate this season. That's going to change next season. So as you get to this time of the year, if St. Louis wants some of its players to keep in the mix, then they work out these sort of loans, and it's it just so happened that Kaspik has had a chance to be around the team, and he's handled it very well. The team's been pleased to have him, and I think it's a positive thing. But I thought he did a nice job last night in the limited minutes that he had. He even was able to pick up an assist on that goal at the end of the game. But I'm not sure about what part he'll play from here on. He's certainly giving himself a chance to be considered with the way he's handled it.
You know, Mitch, one overarching theme we've talked about seemingly throughout the season is discipline and the need to stay disciplined throughout the course of a game. In games 4 and 5 against Grand Rapids, you know, and you saw it, and I, you know, we're hearing it. But the reality was that this team turned the other cheek, and they really, guys like Brendan Lemieux, Patrice Cormier, they didn't allow Grand Rapids to draw them into things. And then last night, you know, a few shenanigans in third period. They're taking some extra penalties. Brendan Lemieux had that very unusual, I've never seen that before, shooting the helmet and hitting the puck and getting a call for interference, which, again, I'm not entirely sure that was interference, but that's the way the refs called it. But, you know, especially against a team like Rockford, who went from 25th power play in the regular season to the best power play, I should say, in the AHL during the playoffs. Just how critical, it sounds obvious, but I'm going to ask it anyways, just how critical is this team staying disciplined throughout the remainder of the season going to be?
Yeah, it's vital. And I think that it was interesting to hear the comments of the coach after the game last night. I mean, you were there, Dave, so you know all about this. But Pascal Vincent said that a good portion of that frustration the Moose were experiencing last night was really from within. They were disappointed with themselves, frustrated with the way that they were playing, the way they were handling the situation, and they let it boil over. They need to recognize, as everyone does in those situations, what they control. They don't control the referee. They don't control the Rockford IceHogs. They control themselves and how loyal they are to each other and their game plan. And they were mad last night because I think they really understood as the game was unfolding that they hadn't carried out the game plan the way they wanted to. They just didn't seem to have the ability to realize that they couldn't do anything about something that had already happened. And all they needed to do was just get back to it in that moment. They struggled with that. Anybody who saw any of the games between Manitoba and Grand Rapids knows those games were nothing like last night's game. Rockford is a skilled team, a fast team. Not to say that there isn't speed and skill with Grand Rapids, but Grand Rapids took a very different approach. They were going to be mean and nasty and hard to deal with, and they were going to get every opportunity they could to get Manitoba off of its game through those means. Rockford has a little bit of that in their lineup, but they're too busy up and down the ice creating scoring chances to really waste a lot of energy on that stuff. And so it wasn't really that kind of a game. There wasn't as much opportunity to be frustrated in last night's game through the actions of the other team as it was in the Grand Rapids series. So I think it would be reasonably straightforward for Manitoba to not be put off by Rockford in terms of their, you know, there's no gloves in the face or very few of them. There's no cross checks in the back or very few of them. Jabs in the back of the legs, that sort of stuff, as we saw so much of in the first round. I think more it's going to be about being a patient. And if that club can be patient, the Moose can be patient, then I think the discipline would follow suit.
Mitch Peacock is the Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster. The Moose and the IceHogs, game 2 this afternoon at 4 o'clock at Bell MTS Place. You can hear the game at moosehockey.com. Mitch, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much. And just a reminder, non-perishable food items for Winnipeg Harvest. If you're making your way down to the game today, that would be much appreciated.
Absolutely. Got to fill the bins for Winnipeg Harvest. Thanks again, Mitch.
Take care, guys.
When we come back, more on the Moose and the IceHogs. Game 1, we'll look forward to Game 2 as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Black Cormier gets the puck off to Johnson. Johnson center line, Clendenning. Clendenning stationary. The Moose are happy with that, but now he's getting more mobile, and he gets it off to DiDomenico. Backside scores. Deflected in front by Sakura, who got net side on Schilling and was able to put it into the net. Rockford makes the Moose pay for the penalty problems.
Rockford defeating the Manitoba Moose last night. It was a 4-1 final at Bell MTS Place.
4-2,
pardon me. Rockford takes a 1-0 lead in the best of 7 series. Game 2 goes this afternoon at 4 p.m. Dave, what were your thoughts on Game 1? You were there last night, of course, as you are the Moose insider here for us here on IllegalCurve.com. So what happened last night that, you know, Rockford was able to take advantage of the Manitoba Moose and come away with that 4-2 victory? Was that Sammy Niku, you know, missed tripping call that led to almost immediately thereafter a Rockford goal? Was that your TSN turning point?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the game's relatively close before that. It was a 2-1 game, and they had just scored. Rockford had just scored on the power play. So to me, it was a pretty big missed call. I thought the refs put their whistles away for the most part. They missed, I mean, again, you know, I thought they missed a number of penalties. So I thought it was a bit of an unusual game because they called some things I didn't anticipate them calling, like the Brendan Lemieux penalty. Because prior to Lemieux shooting his helmet, so in the AHL, as soon as you lose your helmet, you have to go to the bench.
Okay.
It's the rule. And if you don't, then it's a penalty. And so Lemieux was frustrated because he had literally been cross-checked in the head probably three times, not cross-checked, but he had been high stick. The stick got up high probably three times prior to that. And you could see there was frustration. So he just, you know, his helmet was on the ground, obviously not from his own volition. So he was frustrated, shot it, ends up being a penalty.
Shot the helmet and
it hit the puck.
Like he shot the helmet at the puck
carrier?
He
just in frustration just shot it and it ended up hitting the puck, which again, I don't know how often you ever see that. But it was an unusual set of circumstances. Now that resulted in a penalty, but that was the end of the second period. But I just think there was some frustration in the inconsistency in the officiating. But as Mitch touched on, and I think he's 100% right, there's nothing you can do. You just have to keep playing your game. And so with a Rockford team that's as I mean, these guys have 1,500 NHL games amongst all these players. So there's a lot of experience on this team. You know, sometimes people say, okay, they're the fourth place team, the Moose are the third place team, Moose have a home ice advantage. That kind of, they should have the edge. The reality is the fact is that, especially in the AHL, because things change so much, as Mitch touched on, this isn't a team with Jack Roslovic on it. This is a team that doesn't have Mason Appleton on it right now, who's still injured because of a headshot he took in game two of the first round. This is a team that doesn't have Michael Spacek. This is a team that was very, very limited. I mean, again, kudos to them for getting through that first round the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that they're hampered in that a lot of their offense right now isn't on the ice. So from my perspective, if they get Michael Spacek back, I don't think Mason Appleton comes back this afternoon. Maybe we see him for game three would be my guess. But
game
that's
three,
just
Wednesday night, I believe, in Rockford?
Yeah, in Rockford. Okay. So that to me, hopefully for him, is enough time to kind of get ready. But again, it's too hard to tell with these types of injuries as to what his timeline is. And the coach has labeled him as day-to-day at this point.
With game three on Wednesday night, that gives me an opportunity to mention a programming note that I guess this coming NHL this week will be Tuesday night at 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290, where we'll look back at Game 6 between, of course, the Predators and the Jets, and potentially get you ready for a Game 7 between the Preds and the Jets on Thursday night. So, again, Tuesday night at 6 o'clock for NHL this week, this coming Tuesday.
Yeah, and getting back to the Moose here with Game 2 coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon, you know, that's why Michael Spacek's return to the lineup, Dave, is going to be so huge. And, you know, we've talked a lot this year, not just us, but everybody around Winnipeg has been talking about how good, you know, that 2015 draft class is looking. And, you know, you think of Mason Appleton and you think of Sammy Niku, but Michael Spacek, fourth round pick back in 2015. And, you know, he was excellent for them in the regular season. And, you know, you've touched on this, but the Moose have had trouble scoring goals in the playoffs. And against Grand Rapids, you know, they erupted in game five for that big 5-1 victory. But there were a couple of games there where I believe they only had a goal. So getting Spacek's offense is going to be huge. And, you know, they're going to depend on the usual suspects. Buddy Robinson, Chase DeLeo, Nick Petan. You know, maybe you get a player like J.C. LaPon scoring. He hasn't scored yet in the playoffs. So Spacek's return is going to be crucial. It comes at the best time. Unfortunately, he was suspended. But you know, they need him right now.
Julian Melchiori back in the Manitoba Moose lineup after he missed about two full months with a concussion, with concussion symptoms. How's he looked in his return? He came back in the first round series against the Grand Rapids Griffins.
Somewhat unexpectedly. I had spoken to Coach Vincent prior to them going on the road, and it actually took me by surprise because I didn't think he would be. Before the playoffs began, I asked the coach what he thought, and he thought he didn't know if he would be a player for the first round.
Right.
And he was skating, which, you know, we saw him at the Iceplex quite often, but whether he'd be a player was another question. Then Dennis Bayek was at the first game, and we were chatting, and he asked me about Julian Melchiori and whether he'd be a player. And I said, well, not expecting him to be in the lineup for the first round, based on the information I had from the coach. And Dennis kind of looked at me. I said, okay, fine. Then we kept chatting, and then I looked down, and this is during pregame warm-up, and all of a sudden I see Melchiori's in the warm-up. I thought, Mel, what's he doing there? And I asked the coach whether it was he was actually going to be a player or whether it was simply just to get him to feel like he was a part of the team. And you kind of got the impression that it was a little bit of both, that he was maybe getting closer, but also just to kind of get him to feel. Because you have to understand, Julian Melchiori is a guy who's played 340 games and had never played a playoff game before. He missed the call to run when they went with the ice caps. He was injured. So from his perspective, I really think that was driving him for the last couple of months. Drew, you touched on it. He missed from February 25th. His first game was April 25th. Back in the lineup. So from his perspective, I really think that was pushing him, was that he had never played a playoff game. And for him to miss out on another, you know, especially with Grand Rapids, it was so up in the air as to whether there'd be a second round for him to come back to.
Sure.
So whether he came back, I'm not suggesting he came back early, because I don't think the team would have allowed that. But the fact is, good for him for getting back in. And you know what? He's made a difference. He's been impactful so far for the team.
Definitely has been impactful. What does he have? I think 4 points in his return to the Moose lineup on the back end. They're getting some offense from the back end. You know, Cam Schilling's got 4 points. Pardon me, Melchiori with 3 points in four games. And then Sammy Nuku's got his 3 points in the playoffs so far. So it'll be game two tonight, pardon me, this afternoon, later on this afternoon. Sort of a rare 4 o'clock puck drop between the Manitoba Moose and the Rockford IceHogs as game two goes in that series. Quickly, Dave, your sort of final thoughts on what you're looking for in game two today.
Well, I mean, it's a critical game. You can't really afford to go down 2-0. It's, you know, the next three, it's a 2-3-2 series. So you got to be careful. You can't go down 2-0. Got to earn a split. So, no, I just think the Moose have to stick to their game, like Mitch talked about, and really just play fast. And again, getting back, Michael Spacek will do wonders for this team.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. A big thank you to our guests. We had Dave McCarthy of NHL.com, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press, Sean Shapiro of TheAthletic.com, and Manitoba Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, it'll be available on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Also available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.